360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And good morning and welcome to the show, The Week That Was, now proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. And joining us in the studio this morning, we have got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Friday.
We've got the independent member for Goyder, Kezia Purick. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Katie. Good morning, rural people. And it's not Valentine's Day yet. That's on Sunday. And it's Valentina's birthday on Sunday too, the big fat black pig that my mother has.
Oh, she
I don't know where that was going.
Going down here quickly. Happy birthday, Valentina.
And, of course, Natasha Barnes.
Do you need me to introduce myself? Katie's losing it here. Everyone else is. Morning, people.
Oh, and a big hello to everybody in Alice Springs as well, because we're broadcasting live.
Hello, Scott Anderson.
There's rain on the way for Central Australia. All the rain we got's going down there.
Well, good. Look, before we get into some of the issues that they've been experiencing in Alice Springs, I want to just ask you firstly, Minister Files, for a bit of an update when it comes to COVID. I know that there is certainly a very much evolving situation at the moment.
Yes, Katie. So the Chief Health Officer, Hugh Heggie, is currently participating in an emergency AHPPC meeting, I understand. I spoke to him earlier this morning. The Melbourne Holiday Inn cluster, it appears to be spreading. We currently have those four declared hotspots for Melbourne, but after he participates in AHPPC, we'll reconvene the emergency cabinet. So I'll have to jump out of the studio a little bit early, Katie, to head to that meeting, and we'll update Territorians soon after
that. Is it looking as though we are going to have, the whole of Melbourne a hotspot again?
Katie, I won't preempt anything, but I think it reminds people again that travel is not what it used to be, that, you know, it may look fine at the beginning of the week, and by the time you go to come home, things have changed. But we've kept people safe, and we will continue to listen to the health advice, but certainly emerging and evolving this morning.
All right. Well, we'll keep a very close eye on that. Now, I do want to get into the issue of the week, and I think you'd have to say that it has well and truly reached boiling point, and that is the issue of crime. Now, obviously, throughout the week, it was alcohol-related break-ins. Through the week, Berry Springs Tavern, Yogi's Way, a restaurant in Cullum Bay, Char, on the same day that they were due to reopen. I actually started the week hearing from one of our listeners about a 70-year-old woman in the rural area who'd been broken into. I think you'd have to agree, we'd all have to agree, that this is something that is just dominating at the moment, and people have had enough.
It's been dominating for a long, long time, Katie, and people absolutely have enough. Overnight, I saw Fresh Point were broken into. Of course, we're getting some really scary data coming out of Alice Springs. I know you want to talk about that later, but, the government can't bury its head in the sand on this any longer. Why won't it agree to bring forward legislation to undertake more bail reform? Why is it dragging its heels on not having the mandatory community service as an immediate consequence? You know, breach of bail condition as an offence. All of these types of measures we talk about. We know 50% of youth arrested last year were on bail at the time of being arrested. Clearly, there's a massive problem. People are being victimised every single day. The cost to business is enormous. The cost to our society, the cost to people's health and well-being, you can't even put a dollar figure on that. What is the government doing about this? How can they stand by and pretend it's not happening?
I agree, Leah. It's not a, what did you say, Katie, boiling point? I think it's had a flash point. And it doesn't appear that anywhere in the Territory is immune from what is happening. So in the undercurrent or in the underworld, not literally, there's obviously talk. These young offenders know that they're relatively untouchable. I heard the Minister for Police on the radio this morning, Alice Springsy kind of area, that there's 30 young people on remand, and they're on remand clearly because they didn't get bail, but there's a hell of a lot of people who do get bail and keep reoffending. The Minister also said, Minister for Police, that they weren't looking at the bail legislation at all. They're reviewing something, but wouldn't elaborate for me. That's her prerogative as a cabinet minister and government. But, you know, the people who are doing this is a cross-section of people. It's just not the same people, the youth in the town. That place in Humpty Doo, the 74-year-old lady, It wasn't just her. It was about four other properties in that same area. Now, I'm going down on Sunday morning. They're having a street meet, so they can all get together and introduce each other if they don't know each other, swap phone calls, because that's what people are having to do. They can't rely upon the police, and no disrespect to the police, because they're busy doing what they have to do everywhere. They can't rely upon the current legislation, so they're going to do things themselves. It's like a new invention of Neighbourhood Watch, because we know that Neighbourhood Watch has been canned. They've got Child Watch now, or Youth Watch, I forget what it's called. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good concept. Street meet. Get to find your neighbours, because you're the only ones that are going to help each other. You can't rely on the authorities
Kezia,
anymore.
Kezia, I've got a message here from one of our listeners, and it says four more houses invaded in Girraween last night, and that's just what I've been personally told, says that texter. I also saw vision, actually, from Palmerston, and I believe it was yesterday, where a young person had broken into somebody's home, allegedly broken into their yard, and that home owner had used force to apprehend that person until the police arrived.
Bolt cutters. They're not dumb, these young people. They have bolt cutters. Now, and they could be strong, you know, like, depending on the size of the bolt cutters, depends on what they can cut. But I think it was about 3 days ago, I won't say what my road is, but people who know me know where I live, there was a suspicious looking vehicle going very slowly up that road. Now, Neighbourhood Watch is alive and well in our street, and we got the number plate, we got the colour, and I gave it to the police. When they were seen, up went the windows and they took off at a million miles an hour. So what the hell were they doing on that road? If they're looking to buy a house or, you know, just checking out gardens, they would have stopped and talked to the person who saw them, but no.
I don't think that's the case. Yeah, that's right.
You've got to be very careful.
And, you know, Katie, I've spent a lot of time with senior territorians this week right across the top end, and it's the number one issue that they were talking to me about. I mean, at one point I had a little queue of people waiting to talk to me, and it was crime, 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 crime. You're starting to hear talk about, well, if the government's not going to do something, we're going to have to do something, which, of course, you do not want to see that vigilantism
100%.
Take place. But people are feeling desperate. Well, I mean, community safety is key at the moment.
And do you know what? We don't actually need to look too far to see how things can very badly turn. I mean, in Queensland, just last weekend, there was a situation where a young woman on a motorcycle was allegedly killed at the hands of, following on from a vehicle being stolen, a car then with vigilantes in it, allegedly then struck that motorcyclist in Townsville, and she lost her life.
Gosh.
Now, at the end of the day, what we've seen in Queensland is the government there has acted incredibly swiftly to make some changes. I know that, Natasha, you told us last week about some of the changes that are being implemented or set to be implemented here in the Territory. But look, for me, you know, something's very much broken. If we've got a situation where we've already got electronic monitoring devices, which was one of the big aspects of the announcement that was made by the Queensland government, we've already got those devices. We've had one issued last financial year. You know, we know that these changes to the bail laws, it is the thing, whether it's right or wrong, it is the thing that is brought up more than anything with us on air about something as something that people would like to see change. I just don't understand really why the government is just totally shutting that side of the debate off and not going, well, maybe we do need to actually relook at this.
So, Katie, for me as a government minister, you always look at what other jurisdictions are doing, and that's often how legislation changes. And so in terms of the specific questions around the bail law, that would be well placed at the Attorney General or the Chief Minister. But in 2021, we will be introducing legislation to punish ringleaders, so to punish those who recruit young people to commit the crimes when, you know, it's organised and there's...
So what kind of evidence is there to sort of suggest that the ringleaders or that they're, you know, that we've got a situation where that is often happening, where we have got older people that are actually leading the young?
How are you going to prove it?
So in terms of ringleader legislation, I think it's known that sometimes you see older youth engage with younger people and involve them in committing a crime because they may not, you know, the court system may be different for them. Also review the penalties for property crime to ensure that, you know, crimes like break-ins and car theft can be punishable properly and that there is... in terms of the punishment and the assessment of it, that it's more even. Sometimes there's a breakdown, even the time of day that a crime can occur. The penalty might not be the same depending on that. And also in terms of making sure that police have those resources, but this Biz Secure grants are still available. So working with businesses, because at the end of the day, crime is very much a real issue. It has been a real issue. It will continue. You know, we're working as hard as we can, but making sure we can give those businesses some tools to help protect their premises.
I want to talk about Alice Springs in just a moment, but I do want to say, before we get to that, one of the things that I find so incredibly disturbing at the moment is that we seem to have a situation where some people are preying upon those who are older in our community. Mm-hmm. Over the last few weeks, you know, I've had, towards the end of last year, obviously we saw that situation where we had an older man in his wheelchair bashed and robbed. I've had earlier in the week, obviously, we've spoken about a lady in her 70s whose home was invaded.
The fellow at Fred's Pass.
That's exactly right. Yes. You know, you've got to ask yourself, what type of kids are we dealing with? What type of young people are you dealing with that do that kind of thing?
Completely dysfunctional. It's completely unacceptable. When you see someone that is, and it's not meant to, but that is senior, that is elderly in the community, you know, let them go ahead of you in the queue at the supermarket, or offer to give them a hand, or do they not see them as someone that is an easier victim?
Well,
that is completely unacceptable.
And that seems to be what some see
it as. Katie, we need to, as a society, say that that is unacceptable. And certainly I know that my children, you know, very much respect older people. They have an important role to play. Senior Territorians, we have a number of schemes to keep people here, and that is unacceptable.
But that also harks back to, you know, what role has Territory families got in this? You know, parental responsibility is something that's very important. It's something people talk about all the time as being part of this solution. And, you know, if children are being neglected or in situations that aren't supportive to allowing them to grow up and live, you know, a life that contributes to our community, Territory families have a critical role to play there. And you know, it's just another reason why we don't think youth justice should be in Territory families. They have a responsibility for the care and protection of children. That is an enormous issue right across the Territory. There are correlations with youth justice, and youth justice should be in correction so that they can deal with the pointy end of the kids who are offended and sentenced.
Katie, right. We know that the strong correlation between child protection and children that grow up disadvantaged end up in the youth justice system, and those generational reforms take time, and we all know that.
They
we've seen the
but
evidence.
In the meantime, we've got to make sure that Territorians are safe. And I said that to the Chief Minister on Monday. I don't think that anybody in this studio or even listening this morning would dispute that we don't need to make those generational changes, but we need to ensure that every Territorian is safe right now. We can't just say, all right, well, let's not worry about those homeowners who are getting broken into because we've got to wait a generation for things to change. We've got to make sure that we're really hitting things at the pointy end and making those generational changes. And at the pointy end right now seems to be where we're having issues. And that seems to be where people are really getting very fed up. But look, I want to take you to an interview that I did earlier in the week with Darren at Wicked Needs. Take a listen. How are things going from your perspective in Alice Springs right now?
It's no good, Cody. Last weekend was just chaos, absolute chaos. People being randomly bashed outside hotels as they walk around the street. A girl being thumped in the side of the face. Cars being jumped on. So you're going to have those kind of things, and you're going to have a major tourist event in the CBD. And I called Natasha Files out on it. And they've backed down. They've moved it. Instead of going at the problem, this is what they do. This is what they do. Oh, we'll just move that now. We'll just move that. So everyone, they're all free events to the public, they were. So now they're gone. That's all right. So what else is next? What's next? And then you've got the member for Breitling, 24 weeks since the election. So the MLA in Alice Springs actually had a meeting with a government minister here in town about crime. So don't bloody well say you're having a go and you're hurting Joshy Boy, because you're not. It's not good enough. You're getting paid by the public. Pull your heads in and look after us.
And I think that really we've heard then, Darren has hit the nail on the head. We've got to put our politics aside. I've been saying this for a while, but I think rather than looking at this situation and going, oh, Katie's being a pain in the ass, asking questions about this again, Leah's being a pain in the neck, Filesy won't answer our questions, whatever you want to say, We all actually need to just step out, step aside for a second, look at this and go, what can we actually do differently? Each and every one of us, but particularly the people who are in these decision-making jobs, to try and make some change here. You know,
You're quite correct. It's got to be a collaborative approach, you know, across party lines, or, you know, independents as well, of course, because it's slowly getting worse. I was relayed a story only yesterday about a particular group of people. They want to sit in the Raintree Park and have their lunch there. They can't, because the local people who hang out in that park spit on people. A young apprentice hairdresser went to walk past there and they spat on her back. Now, in Alice Springs, a friend and they came back, they drove back from down south from a holiday. They stayed at Alice. They couldn't get anywhere. They stayed at the Diplomat because everything else was booked. They said that the fellow said they could hear people all night on the streets. Then they went to McDonald's down there to get a cup of coffee because that's all that was open.
Yep.
Nice young, or a young Aboriginal girl opened the door for the woman who's about my age, and she said, oh, thank you. She said, oh, now you give me food. So I opened the door for you, said, now you give me food. And so my friend said, no, that's not my responsibility. But then the manager of McDonald's came out and roused on her, because this is the tricks they're doing. They're doing these, open the door for you, oh, now give me some money or give me some food. You know, so there's something that's going wrong in our society, and obviously Alice Springs appears to be bearing the brunt of it.
Yeah.
But not exclusively. There's problems up here too with attitude. And I believe personally it started after that Royal Commission. They don't believe that there's consequences. A lot of them believe that there are they are untouchable. Okay, there might be 30 young people in remand. Well, woohoo, there's probably about 30 adults in remand too.
Well, the Chief Minister told me on the show on Monday that there's 40, I believe there was 40 young people who are in Don Dale at the moment, 30 on remand. And look, you know, and then there's, I don't have the figures in front of me, but there's certainly a number that have been through through things like those boot camps. But what I'm really, like, really, what I want to try and find out here is, you know, in Queensland, essentially what we've been told is they're going to look to these electronic monitoring devices. Now, we've already got those, but for some reason, they're not actually being used. Are we able to look at those and try and get to the bottom of why they're not being used and whether they indeed need to be utilised, whether that's going to help? Are we, you know, I don't understand why we're not prepared at all at this point to try and take a closer look at whether we do need to sort of amend these bail laws. If we have got kids who are still committing, who are still doing the wrong thing while they're on bail, well, you know, why don't we look at it? If the police commission is saying to the ABC Alice Springs, 75% of our youth offenders in Central Australia are recidivist offenders, something is wrong. Like, something's broken.
That's right. And repeat offending has to be targeted. And that's why all of our measures revolve around those escalating penalties for repeat offenders, by ensuring that repeat offenders don't have a presumption in favour of bail. But repeat offenders aren't dealt with differently under our law, courtesy of the Gunner government. When 75% of youth offenders in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek are repeat offenders, there's a clear problem. We heard from the police commissioner, that there's a trend of 40 to 50% increase in property-related crime in Alice Springs. We've had the Minister for Police admit she's not focused on bail reform. Mm. We know the police electronic monitoring numbers were one last year. Of course, we had the government bring in that legislation around allowing police to bail people with electronic monitoring, but the legislation is flawed. The processes don't work, and that's got to be revisited. We can't have this set and forget policy system. And, you know, I have to... You know, I know Darren well and I go down and visit him often, but I have to defend Josh Burgoyne. He met with Kate Warden very closely after the election on Territory Families. My team are trying to say to government, there's an issue. Come down. Talk to the people of Alice Springs. You know, Josh Burgoyne and Bill Yan have been calling for the Chief Minister to come down and front
and
people.
Also, they're not in government. They're in opposition.
Not. That's exactly right. We've put all our policies on the table. We talk about it every single sittings. We ask questions every single sittings. We raise it in every possible forum we can. can. The people who can make the change are the government. If they want to take a page out of our book, I'll give them our book.
Do you know what? I think let's step aside from petty politics for a second. I don't even, like, I honestly, for me, if the government says, all right, we are going to take a look at this, I'm not going to say, hey, I told you you should be doing this a year ago. I actually think,
everyone,
do you know,
would cheer.
Everyone would say, excellent.
Great.
We're pleased that it's going to be looked at. Falsey, why is the government just entirely closing the door to this, to, you know, the possibility of changing anything to do with bail?
So, Katie, as I said, and that would be a question well placed to the Attorney General, who has responsibility for that legislation, the Minister for Territory Families. But I outlined already that the pieces of legislation that we are working on, and that's based on evidence from police, based on evidence, you know, that it will make a difference. And these are complex issues. They're not going to change overnight. As I said, we certainly look towards other jurisdictions around what they do and what succeeds. And I do think we
if
need to be
up to you, would you
space.
Take a look at those bail laws?
Katie, we've outlined what we are doing and I'll continue to make sure that within my team that we do that.
Well,
all right.
You know, I mean, you're the tourism minister. Alice Springs, tourism, key fundamental industry, totally being demolished. I mean, this issue with Parchima, you know, pick up the problem, but pick up the beautiful thing that would happen in our community and move it because it's under threat. It just, you know, Natasha, you were the Attorney General for a long time. Now you're not. I understand that. But as Tourism Minister, you know, this is fundamental to your industry. And ultimately, you know, Selena Ubo, we don't even hear from her about this. So we've got little hope in what that is going to achieve.
Are you concerned about the impact that crime is having in Alice Springs on tourism?
So, Katie, in terms of the Parchma, that was a decision made around the event. And the event is set against the backdrop of the Rangers and that lights and the sound and the music. And it's an amazing festival. And so the display in the mall was intended to be a taster, perhaps at a second night for some people. It wasn't intended to have two live interactive displays. And that was a decision made around the event. But absolutely, I understand that crime is a very real issue for the people of Alice Springs. And the tourism industry has been decimated, particularly in Central Australia, with international tourists. And I want to make sure that any possible tourist isn't deterred by any perception.
But it's not a perception. I mean, do you ever think to yourself, what happens if somebody, if we end up with a tourist from interstate that goes to Parchima and gets assaulted?
Katie, tourists around the world have to look out for their safety. And as a government, I've outlined the measures that we're putting in place to keep not only Territorians safe, but to keep those businesses safe and to keep people that come and visit the Territory safe. And we'll continue to be agile and respond with different measures.
360's The Week That Was.
And The Week That Was is proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. Now, throughout the week, well, actually, firstly, we have got Leah Finocchiaro, Kezia Puric and Natasha Files in the studio. Now, throughout the week, there was alcohol research which was released by Deakin University. Now, it showed that the introduction of a minimum floor price for alcohol in the Northern Territory has led to a sharp drop in the consumption of cheap drinks, almost halving the sale of cask wine in Darwin and neighbouring Palmerston within 12 months, apparently. Now, the results from Deakin University-led research show that per capita, the consumption of cask wine fell by 48.8% in Darwin and Palmerston and 50.57% across the Northern Territory. Now, when I spoke to the researcher throughout the week, they said that that people didn't turn to other drinks. But I'm hearing anecdotally, certainly from our listeners, we had a number of people get in contact with us yesterday to say that at their properties or, you know, that they've seen people drinking mouthwash, drinking vanilla essence, drinking, wait for it, and getting on the Bundy rum, which to me is frightening.
Always turn to rum because there's always a fight in every bottle of rum. Everyone knows that. I was in town yesterday or the day before standing on the corner of Nucky Street and Mitchell Street waiting for a friend about 12 o'clock. A man was waiting on the corner there as well. I thought, oh, yeah, he's just waiting for someone. A woman came out of the chemist. She had the, whatever that size is, of Listerine. Gave it to the
middle-sized bottle.
Yeah. Gave
the
it to the man.
Big-sized bottle.
We're on radio, Kezia.
She's got her hands up.
About 20 centimetres apart.
1 foot tall this Listerine bottle was,
yeah.
gave it to the man who then promptly put it under his shirt and they walked off.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether they mix it or what they do with it, but obviously they'd have very clean breath. But, you know, so the cask wine sales have gone down, but that's also been detrimental against the tourist
exactly.
industry and the grey nomads. So it's fine to say the sales have gone down. Well, of course they've gone down.
Because it's unaffordable.
Because the bloody floor price came in. But I'd like to know if researchers have done research onto the uptake of sales over the border, like whether they be wine sales.
Yep.
Now, I was listening to, I think it was Alex Bruce, he said in the rubbish mm-hmm. at Tennant Creek, mm-hmm. they're finding a lot of 4-litre casks. Mm-hmm. Now, we know we haven't had that in the Northern Territory for bloody years.
Because they're getting it from Mount Isa.
They're coming in from Mount Isa.
It's your fault, Katie.
And you can get,
you're from Mount Isa.
And you can get stuff from Coober Pedy. So, okay, sales have gone down, but that doesn't mean that we're a sober society. That's just facts. I always say, when you're looking at research results, always look at the methodology. What have they done and how have they done it? So I'd be really interested in that report to find out what they did and where they did it.
I asked the researcher whether they were able to get any data around the mouthwash and other things that people could be drinking that weren't for sale, you know, at a licensed premises. And he said that those companies that sell those different types of products wouldn't be involved in the research. So essentially they wouldn't allow you to find out whether they are indeed, whether the sales of Listerine, for example, have gone up.
And my understanding is that they didn't look at then the correlation between a drop in the very cheap wines, or what used to be cheap wines, and spirits and other, and, you know, a moving of substances. What they did say is that there was no reduction per capita of alcohol consumption in Darwin and Palmerston, so people aren't drinking less. They're just moving, you know,
exactly.
they're moving to something else.
Move to something else.
And that the only reduction in drinking was where there are pallies, and they couldn't delineate whether or not it was Pally's having the impact, our police auxiliaries on the bottle shop, or whether it was the floor price. So, you know, you've got to be careful with research. And
correct.
Certainly we've seen other research in the past that shows that people are moving to those harder spirits. When you talk to bottle shop owners and people around town, that's certainly their experience. Of course, the Listerine is something I hear about a lot from people. So the government's going to tout this, but it's really just a very small snapshot in time without looking at everything else around it.
Well, this is actually put out by independent researchers who have an Australia Research Council grant. International studies have shown that minimum unit pricing or floor price on alcohol can effectively reduce the consumption among heavy drinkers. We know that with alcohol, it's not the matter of just having one measure. You need to have a range of measures. And what the floor price does, it puts up that cheap drink that people traditionally use purely to get intoxicated. They're not. These are people with chronic conditions, alcoholics, and people that use it to get drunk to cause harm in our community. And so certainly we need to be agile with alcohol policy, and that's what we have been. There's a range of measures, but this is independent research. So
funded
the press
by
release
the government
is there.
That looks at a very small, it looks at whether or not cheap wine, less there's been less cheap wine sold. Well, anybody could tell you that, because basically no one is spending $30 on a 2-litre cask of wine anymore. It's ridiculous.
And I think
what the anecdotal evidence certainly shows, and what evidence wasn't looked at by this report, is that people would rather spend their $30 on something else, which is actually a harder version of alcohol.
This is independent research, and I think you'll find Listerine now has 0% alcohol. They've removed
vanilla essence.
But this highlights the territory we know. We have, you know, a huge problem with alcohol, and that's why as a government we've started to tackle the issues that have been put in the too hard basket. But methylated spirits was, you know, always behind the counter, and this is in the 90s. So, you know, this is an issue that is significant in the territory, and what is significant about it is not just the antisocial behaviour and the crime that comes from it, but it's the impact on our health system, and it's not just the emergency impact with car crashes and into the ED, but it's also those underlying chronic conditions.
Very short or very quick question that has come through. Leah, this one's actually for you. What is the CLP's policy with the BDR?
Yep, so we've always said we would review the BDR, because this government has just set and forget that policy and not looked at it. Of course, we haven't had any data coming from the BDR since June. And now that the data finally got released this week, we saw that in every 969 transactions or swipes, I think it was, one person was on the BDR.
And that's the point of the BDR, because they're banned. They know they can't go and buy alcohol.
But so the reality is secondary supply has
people who are banned
crazy.
Can't purchase alcohol, and people
one in a
do
thousand
try and
people.
Breach that. And no, it's not one,
one
in a thousand,
Leah. Just under 1,000 people get rejected on the BDR.
Yeah, but what about all the people that are on the BDR that know they're on the BDR and they don't go and purchase the
rubbish.
Alcohol?
What about secondary
supply?
They get
their friends to purchase.
I mean, this is the issue. Secondary, we've had police now scrambling trying to address secondary supply. We hear people are spending extraordinary amounts, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a bottle of rum to get around the system or on any other types of alcohol. Then, you know, secondary supply is a huge issue. So we would review.
So what
review,
would you do with the BDR? What's your alcohol policies? We ours are out there to be criticised. And you need to stand up and say what you do.
We would scrap the minimum floor price.
You'd scrap the minimum floor
price. And we would review the BDR and make it more effective.
And that's what we had chaos. When the CLP were elected in 2012, they threw the BDR out overnight and we saw a sharp increase in antisocial behaviour and alcohol-fueled crime in our communities. It was brought back in 2016. And what we've done is we've got an evidence-based approach. You've just dismissed this independent research.
Crime is worse.
Alcohol, as I said, has been an issue in the Territory for
decades. Can I just ask, with the BDR, and I think I raised this with you during the week, Filesy, with the BDR, if you are on the BDR, right, you somehow get your hands on alcohol, whether it's through secondary supply, break and entry, whatever you do, you get your hands on alcohol, you then wind up in the watch house, intoxicated, and on the BDR, what happens?
So, Katie, for some people, if they're on the banned drinker register, they're not meant to be drinking. For other people, they may be on the BDR, and that means they can't purchase takeaway alcohol. So
but
it would
they
depend.
Can still drink.
Yes, but so it would depend on how they're referred onto the BDR.
Has that always been the case?
Yes, Katie, it has been, because there's different pathways.
Yeah, right.
Because you've got responsible sales of alcohol. So it depends why. Some people might be on the BDR because they've got drink driving offences, multiple drink driving offences. Yep. That's one of the mechanisms.
Does that show that there's maybe a flaw in the system, though? Not the fact that you can still drink, but the fact that then you can wind up intoxicated in the watch house when you're on the BDR?
Well, if you end up in the watch house and you've committed a crime and alcohol's a factor, when you go to court, that will all be looked into it. But what the BDR is a point-of-sale intervention, and Leah is completely incorrect. One in the figure that she was reading out, 900-odd people are denied a sale. There's hundreds of people each month that know they're on the BDR. They don't attempt to purchase alcohol. So it's one measure in a system that's relatively inconvenient at that point of sale. You've then got the floor price, as we've just been talking about, which stops people from getting that cheap product purely to get into intoxicated, then you have to have rehabilitation. You have to have co-location of those facilities. It's complex.
I would be keen to find out, if I can, how those rehab numbers are going. You know, like just how many people are going through rehab.
Yeah, Katie, I'll get those for you.
Completing rehab, not just the therapeutic presentation.
It's not simple to complete rehab. If you look at it, so the CLP had
Natasha, you
an
got,
expensive...
Whenever I've asked about this in Parliament, you've given me some ridiculous sized number that's a therapeutic presentation, which involves walking through the door and possibly walking straight back out the door and going back in the next day. I mean, that's not data around effective alcohol rehabilitation.
So the CLP had alcohol mandatory treatment, which was people paid tens of thousands of dollars, and there was no evidence that showed that it worked. We know with alcohol rehabilitation that community-based models succeed, but they do take time, Katie, and perhaps an interview with one of those community-based alcohol treatment providers would be worthwhile for listeners. But I understand on the evidence takes 10 to 12 times of treatment for someone to succeed, and alcoholism is something that they live with for the rest of their life.
So one of the things I have been asking since we came back this year, 360, is if we are going to be basing legislation on, you know, on various different things and spending taxpayers' dollars on various different things, shouldn't we, using, you know, like taking your approach when it comes to alcohol, i.e. research, into account, shouldn't we be doing that across the board when it comes to things like, you know, like youth crime and the like?
But so they're not even doing it for alcohol. They're, no one can say whether it's mandatory, whether it's the floor price, whether it's the BDR, whether it's the pallies. This government, and we warned them right from the start, we said you have to be able to measure all of your different initiatives so that you can see what works, drop what doesn't, spend more money on what does. And they do not separately measure the success of these things. Instead, what they do is take all the credit for the pallies and pour that effectiveness into taking credit for floor price and all this other garbage. You know, and it's because they're not doing the metrics. They're not looking at the data. They're not recording the success. They just set and forget their policy and barge
it's
on ahead.
Absolute rubbish, Katie. We've put in place a round of alcohol measures, and these are all based off an independent review, the Riley Review, and there is research built into this. This is the Australia Research Council. These are people that are nationally and internationally recognised that they have ethics. So Leah just dismisses their research.
Why can't they say how much of it was for pallies?
Let me say my piece.
Why can't they delineate whether or not the pallies had an impact on their floor price data?
So Leah, this is international research that has ethics, and you've just dismissed it because you don't like it.
I have they've written it in their own report.
All right. 360's The Week That Was.
You are listening to The Week That Was, brought to you by De Silva Hebron. And, well, joining us in the studio this morning, we've got Leah Finocchiaro, Kezia Purick and Natasha Files. Now, I want to talk about this story which was released by the Northern Territory News earlier in the week, and I'm just trying to find the details, but it relates to the prison. Now, we know that essentially the union representing the correctional services today says that they are being placed in a very vulnerable position at the Darwin Correctional Centre 9 months after a mass prisoner escape caused more than $20 million in damage. Now, the United Workers Union spokeswoman, Erina Early, said the lives of our officers and prisoners were at risk due to an alleged lack of safety improvements at Sector 6, where more than 20 prisoners escaped from their cells and climbed onto the roofs of multiple buildings in May 2020. Now, this follows on from a report yesterday by Raffaella at the NT News, where she had essentially gotten hold of this report that showed that the government had been warned that this could happen due to some of the some of the issues that they had at the prison. Falsey, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you were the minister at the time. How on earth, did you guys not act on some of these concerns which were raised and try to prevent this from happening before it actually happened?
So, Katie, in terms of this issue, I do need to be careful because this is a matter before the courts presently, but Correctional Services continues and has continued to work to make sure that the facility has whatever upgrades are needed, security upgrades throughout the facility. And over time, and I understand that there has been a significant amount spent on both safety and security at that facility for both the staff, but also to ensure their safety when they're dealing with inmates. At no stage during that incident in May 2020 was there a threat to the wider community, and I'd like to acknowledge those prison officers. We often talk about frontline workers, but those prison officers are in a facility making sure that people that have been sentenced to jail are kept away from the community. So I do need to be careful with my comments, but I can assure the community there was no threat at the time to the broader safety. There's been upgrades. It's a new facility, so it was commissioned under the former Attorney General John Elfrink in around 2014, from memory. And so it's a lease facility. It's a public-private partnership. But I understand that there's continual upgrades made to that facility.
I love how it's commissioned by John Elfrink under the CLP when this is a $1.8 billion arrangement created by the previous Henderson Labor government, which just happened to be completed on our watch. But, Shadow Attorney General Steve Edgington has come out very hard and clearly on this. The fact that government knew there were security issues and could have made a difference and could have avoided this is completely unacceptable. Of course, the threat to life and property, the prisoners and the prison staff is unacceptable. And of course, government has still have not come clean on how much this riot has cost the taxpayer.
And whether it's all been fixed up, which I know it hasn't been.
Well, there you go. Very, very, very serious questions that the government needs to answer. Of course, this is not something they want to talk about. But something like this is very, very concerning. And people do not have confidence that the government has learnt its lesson or is even taking responsibility for it.
Have we found out yet exactly how much it's going to cost to fix the prison?
Katie, I, as the minister not responsible now, I don't have the information, and I want to be really careful in my comments there. So I'm happy to seek some advice off air and feed something back in.
360's The Week That Was.
Now, Natasha Files has had to run off to get to that meeting where they are going to determine exactly what the situation is in terms of those hotspots. But before we get ready to wrap up, Kezia and Leah, there was some discussion earlier in the week about this confusion on a poster, a COVID poster, and the Chief Minister had taken to social media to say, don't cry over your Tom Yum
don't
or your Laksa or whatever he'd said. Look, to me, the fact that everybody that jumped online then just about to comment underneath it was sort of having a crack at him showed that really thought it was a bit tone deaf, if I'm honest.
I think out of touch is probably a good way to describe it, Katie. I mean, you know, of course it's all good to be lighthearted and, you know, you want people in the community to see the human side of you as well as the, you know, the business side. Yeah. But ultimately, as Chief Minister, when you are burying your head in the sand on crime being an issue, when you're taking no action on crime, when you're not out in the community, when you refuse to meet with people and are just failing all round to deliver community safety, you cannot then pop your head up and make some ridiculous joke about whether or not it's Tom Yum or Laksa. I mean, it just fell so flat. People just, it just reinforced what people are already thinking about the Chief Minister, and that is that he's arrogant and out of touch.
Very, very out of touch. I mean, it's all about timing, and clearly the Chief Minister's timing is way off, because you don't make light of a situation that we're currently facing in the Northern Territory. And, you know, Catherine and Tennant Creek are, Alice Springs and Tennant Creek are seriously suffering, as is Darwin. I mean, we know that it's having a huge impact on the economy, and, of course, the insurance industry, you know, is obviously very busy because of so much bloody damage to public property and businesses' property. So they make a flippant comment, you know, about soups. It's just nonsense. And, I mean, it also means that, you know, who's overseeing these things within the department who did it? I mean, come on. You know, that's just plain sloppy editing. And they really need to go back to the drawing board and have a serious look at what they're doing in their jobs, if that's the best they can come up with.
I mean, if he's going to be that shocked about the difference between a Tom Yum and a Laksa, he should be mortified about what's happening on our streets.
Correct.
Now, before we wrap up, of course, we here at Mix 104.9 have been taking part in FebFit and trying to get our steps up. Leah, I noticed that the CLP has got their own team now.
We
team
do.
For what? Oh, for the Step
for
Challenge,
FebFit.
Kezia. Join my team, Kezia.
Oh, I'll join
No, join
team.
Our team.
Controversial.
One step at a time.
Thousands of steps walking around my property. I'll join. Who wants me?
Have you got the ladder there, Katie? Have you got the ladder in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me.
We were running in like third place for a while there. I haven't updated my steps in a couple of days. But if you want to see the CLP opposition, take out FebFit. Join our team. Go online and do it.
Well, and Labor's got a team now as well.
Oh, of course, they copied us.
They're very slow to
I'll just take you to the way that we're looking right now, because we have got some fantastic listeners that have joined Team 360 that are really getting their steps up. But right now, South Darwin Rugby League Football Club is beating everybody. In second place is Team 360. Third is Hot to Trot, which is that young people station. They're trying to catch up to us on Hot 100. Then in fourth is the CLP opposition. And then it goes on. Territory Labor Steppers are in ninth place, closely followed by Carers NT. So, Kezia, join my team.
All right, you've got to show me.
Well, CLP opposition, join us.
And we had been bullying Matt Cunningham from Sky News. Now, he's obviously not here this morning.
Well, he's got
and
long
then
legs.
Yesterday,
he
apparently
up.
Tore his calf muscle.
Oh,
so.
Sounds like an excuse to me. The old torn the calf muscle excuse.
Gammon.
Anyway, we better wrap up. Good on you both. Leah Finocchiaro, opposition leader, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And Kezia Purick, the independent member for Goyder, thank you.
Thank you. And I've sent you a lovely photo of that big fat pig, Valentina.
Oh, I can't
Happy
wait
Valentine's
to see.
Day
well,
to
I hope everyone can get out on the mower this weekend.
On the mower.
Hopefully there's a bit of sun and we can hear the glorious tones of the mowers going.
Good on
Thanks,
you.
Katie.
Thanks so much for your time. You're listening to Mix 104.9's 360. That was The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.